York. This is Democracy Now!
It became clear to me that this might actually be a teachable moment.
Yes.
That we might seize this moment to reflect on what it means to live on this planet in the 21st century and our responsibilities not only to people in our immediate community, mm-hmm. but to people all over the planet.
Civil rights icon Angela Davis returns to her hometown of Birmingham, Alabama, where she's honored by thousands in an event organized after the Birmingham Civil Rights Institute rescinded a major award for Davis due to her support for Palestinian rights. After major outcry, the Institute reversed its decision. We'll speak to the Institute's executive director, Andrea Taylor.
We think that restoring the award was the right thing to do, and we hope that a lesson has been learned about having the courage and being willing to advocate on behalf of that, something that should actually happen.
Angela Davis has yet to say if she'll accept the award.
I think that should be a collective decision, particularly a decision that is taken by activists here in Birmingham.
We'll hear from Angela Davis as well as participants in an Angela Shabbat held in Birmingham as well as cities around the country Friday night. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. President Trump's facing mounting legal and political challenges after he declared a national emergency Friday in an attempt to circumvent Congress and build a wall on the U.S.-Mexico border. This is Trump speaking in the Rose Garden on Friday.
In fact, the primary fight was on the wall. Everything else we have so much, as I said, I don't know what to do with it. We have so much money. But on the wall, they skimped. So I did. I was successful in that sense, but I want to do it faster. I could do the wall over a longer period of time. I didn't need to do this, but I'd rather do it much faster.
In addition to the nearly $1.4 billion of border barrier funding contained in the newly passed spending bill, Trump plans to divert federal funds from the military and Treasury Department budgets, ballooning the overall cost for the border wall to $8 billion, far more than the $5.7 billion Trump previously asked for. Trump also said he expects to be sued over the move, but believes he'll ultimately prevail at the Supreme Court, citing his Muslim travel ban as a precedent for such a legal path. California, along with other states, including Minnesota, Oregon, New Mexico, and Hawaii, are planning legal action challenging Trump's emergency declaration. House Democrats say they'll pass a resolution disapproving the declaration, while the White House over the weekend indicated Trump will veto any congressional efforts to block his plan. Legal groups, including the ACLU and Public Citizen, are also planning to challenge the emergency declaration in court. Hundreds of protests have been planned around the country today. In New York City, demonstrators turned out Friday evening in front of the Trump International Hotel to protest the emergency declaration. Multiple arrests were reported at the peaceful demonstration after police blocked the sidewalks and protesters instead moved into the street. This is Jody Q of Rise and Resist speaking to Democracy Now!
It's unconstitutional. It's completely immoral. It's against everything that we stand for. This is a nation of immigrants, and there is no reason that we should be keeping immigrants out. We should be celebrating them and welcoming them. If he's going to mess with our business, we're going to mess with his business.
In Aurora, Illinois, a gunman went on a shooting spree Friday, killing five and wounding six others. 45-year-old Gary Martin opened fire on his co-workers at water valve manufacturer Henry Pratt Company after learning of his termination. The gunman, who was later killed by police, has worked at the company for 15 years. Martin had previously been convicted and served time for violence against a former girlfriend, including hitting her with a baseball bat and stabbing her with a knife. Police say Martin Smith & Wesson handgun was not legally obtained, but that he did manage to obtain a firearm owner ID card despite having a felony record. Venezuela expelled a group of visiting European lawmakers Sunday as political tensions over the leadership crisis continued to mount. Meanwhile, the U.S. is continuing to deliver aid to the Colombian border with Venezuela in defiance of sitting President Nicolas Maduro. The United Nations, the Red Cross, and other relief organizations have refused to work with the U.S. on delivering aid to Venezuela, which they say is politically motivated. The AP is reporting U.S. military aircraft are now being used to transport U.S. supplies to the region. Opposition leader Juan Guaido spoke at a rally in Caracas Saturday, calling for a million volunteers to go and retrieve international aid at the border on February 23rd. Florida Senator Marco Rubio, who's been outspoken in his support for Guaido and his desire to oust Maduro, made a trip to Colombia over the weekend, where he, among others, ratcheted up the U.S.'s anti-Cuban rhetoric.
The only military intervention that exists today in Venezuela is a Cuban intervention. All of the institutions and government organizations have been taken by them. They've been taken by the Cubans. How is that possible, that an official who has been sworn to protect his country has delivered control of his own homeland to Cuba, to another country?
Speaking at the Munich Security Conference this weekend, Iran's Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif accused Israel and the United States of escalating the likelihood of war in the Middle East.
I think last I checked international law, violating Lebanon's airspace and shooting into Syria is a violation of international law. So let's wake up.
So the risk is great.
Risk is great.
Last week, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu boasted that a U.S.-convened conference in Poland was aimed at promoting war with Iran, while U.S. Vice President Mike Pence called on European allies to pull out of the historic Iran nuclear accord. Germany has openly rejected this call, defending a multilateral approach to tackling the issue. Israel launched a series of airstrikes last month against facilities it says belong to Iran's Revolutionary Guard in Syria. In Haiti, Prime Minister Jean-Henri Saint announced emergency spending cuts Saturday after 9 days of anti-government protests, which resulted in at least 7 deaths. Protesters have been calling for President Jovenel Moïse to step down over the country's economic woes and a corruption scandal involving the suspected embezzlement of nearly $4 billion of Petrocaribe funds Haiti received as part of a Venezuela oil subsidy program. In Nigeria, at least 8 people were killed Saturday in a suicide bombing in the northeastern city of Maiduguri. A joint task force said Boko Haram was responsible for the attack. In more news from Nigeria, officials announced Saturday presidential and parliamentary elections would be postponed by a week due to logistical reasons just hours before Nigerians were set to head to the polls. Pope Francis defrocked U.S. Cardinal Theodore McCarrick Saturday after the Vatican found him guilty of sex crimes against children and adults, including using confessions to solicit sex. McCarrick was once considered to be the most powerful man in the American Catholic Church. The 88-year-old former Archbishop of Washington, D.C., is the highest-ranking member of the Catholic Church to be defrocked over the sex abuse scandal, which means he will be stripped of his duties and status as a priest. This marks the first time an American cardinal has ever been removed from the priesthood. This is Ann Barrett Doyle, an advocate for survivors of sexual abuse by clergy members.
The bishops who surrounded McCarrick and knew or should have known that he was a sexual predator. This, we believe, includes the Pope himself in that he knew or should have known from the earliest days of his papacy that this prominent cardinal already had a file on him at the Vatican.
On Friday, the Supreme Court announced it would hear a case to determine whether the Trump administration can legally include a question about citizenship in the 2020 census. The case will be heard in April, leaving just enough time for a ruling to be made before the census forms are printed in June. State Department spokesperson Heather Nauert has removed herself from consideration to be U.S. ambassador to the United Nations. This, according to a statement released Saturday. The withdrawal is reportedly due to Nauert's past hiring of a nanny who did not have authorization to work in the U.S. and her failure to pay taxes on time. The news comes after Trump's National Golf Club was accused of hiring dozens of undocumented workers over the years, firing at least 18 from five golf courses in New York and New Jersey in the past 2 months. In Louisiana, a judge handed down a 10-year prison sentence to Roland Bourgeois, a white man who shot three black men in 2005 as they were trying to evacuate Hurricane Katrina ravaged New Orleans. In October, Bourgeois pleaded guilty to the hate crime, admitting he shot the men because of their race. At the time, he reportedly told a black neighbor, quote, "Anything coming up this street darker than a brown paper bag is getting shot." And in sports news, Colin Kaepernick and the NFL reached an undisclosed settlement Friday in Kaepernick's collusion case against the league and its 32 teams. The former San Francisco 49ers quarterback accused the NFL of preventing him from signing on to any teams in retaliation for taking the knee during the national anthem as a protest against police violence and racism. Eric Reed, a former teammate of Kaepernick's who joined him in kneeling on the field in 2016, also settled his grievance against the NFL. Reed joined the Carolina Panthers last year after being temporarily unsigned. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Civil rights icon and scholar Angela Davis returned to her hometown of Birmingham, Alabama, over the weekend. She was originally planning to come to receive the Fred L. Shuttlesworth Award from the Birmingham Civil Rights Institute. But the institute withdrew the award last month, soon after the Birmingham Holocaust Education Center sent a letter urging the board to reconsider honoring Davis due to her support of the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement targeting Israel. The institute faced swift and widespread outcry. The Birmingham mayor condemned the decision. He's an ex officio member of the Birmingham Civil Rights Institute's board. The Birmingham City Council unanimously passed a resolution of support for Davis, as did Birmingham's Board of Education. The institute then reversed its decision and reinstated the award. But Angela Davis has yet to say if she will accept it. While the Institute canceled its gala event, scheduled for February 16th, last Saturday night, the Birmingham Committee for Truth and Reconciliation organized its own event to honor Davis, an icon of the Black liberation movement. Dr. Davis is a Birmingham native who grew up in a neighborhood known as Dynamite Hill because it was bombed so frequently by the Ku Klux Klan. Her work around issues of gender, race, class, and prisons has influenced critical thought and social movements across generations. She's a leading advocate for prison abolition, a position informed by her own experience as a prisoner and fugitive on the FBI's top 10 most wanted list more than 40 years ago. She's also a professor emerita at the University of California, Santa Cruz. Well, on Friday, Jewish supporters of Angela Davis across the nation held Angela Davis Solidarity Shabbats, declaring, "Angela, you are welcome at this Shabbat." The language was inspired by the posters that supporters of Davis put in their windows declaring, "Angela, sister, you are welcome in this house," when she went underground 4 decades ago as the FBI hunted her down. Well, Democracy Now! Was in Birmingham this weekend to cover all the events around Angela Davis's homecoming. And a remarkable event of more than 3,000 people welcoming her to Birmingham on Saturday night. We'll play a part of the conversation she had Saturday. But first, we go back to Friday, when we first arrived in Birmingham and covered an Angela Shabbat.
Baruch Atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam, Hamotzi Lechem Min Haaretz. Amen.
My name is Jesse Schaefer. A whole series of events sort of occurred that got me here. After I heard about what happened with Angela Davis, I had a lot of intense feelings, very intense and strong feelings. And as somebody who, my Judaism is directly rooted in social justice and building the world that I seek, it felt like a really amazing opportunity to share this space that I was feeling with other people. So for me, a direct expression of that was hosting a Shabbat to create space to both honor Angela Davis and also to demonstrate Jewish support for Angela Davis, that the true reflection of Jewish values is this, like building community around building a better world.
Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam, borei peri hagafen.
You mentioned as you were blessing the bread and the candles and the challah, the bread, that Angela Davis embodied your Jewish ideals. Can you explain that?
Yeah.
I was raised in the context of historic Jewish oppression and harnessing our historic peoplehood. And that the greatest way to utilize that is to understand that our struggles are linked, right? That we are more powerful when we understand that our oppression and our liberations are linked. And so for me, Angela Davis is a direct expression of those values. And she has always understood that our historic struggles are linked, whether it's Palestinians, it's black folks in the South, Jewish folks, really any struggle for justice, that they're all linked and that we're stronger together.
My name is Phyllis Mark. I've lived in Birmingham for 22 years and was on my head to leave for the first 18 or so. I am here tonight because one of the things that has been so difficult for me to live here has been the conservatism, and the Jewish community here also has never felt like my home. And I grew up culturally very strongly as a Jew, and it was something that I've missed since I've been here.
How many synagogues or shuls are there here?
There are three synagogues here. There's one Orthodox, one Conservative, one Reform, and there is a Chabad. So that's the four organizational homes for the Jewish people here, yes.
So what was your response to Angela Davis hearing that she was receiving a major award from the Birmingham Civil Rights Institute, the Fred Shuttlesworth Award, and then hearing that the Institute and the museum had rescinded that award and the reasons for it?
I was extremely excited that she was invited here. I thought that she would be a voice that people would listen to. She has very strong roots here in Birmingham. She has been involved in social justice issues across the board in terms of culture, nationality, and I thought it was very important for them to offer her that invitation. I thought it was a very apt invitation. When they rescinded it, I was shocked. And then I wasn't so shocked because I realized most of the board of the Civil Rights Institute are white corporate men, or at least some of them, the powerful ones on the board. There were also conversations about Jewish organizations and people who were very upset by the fact that she had been invited and apparently had voiced their protests to the Civil Rights Institute. And they're involved, I think, financially with them, and they're involved in other organizational associations. And that really upset me because as a Jew, I felt that it was especially important for somebody like Angela Davis to be here.
What did you understand were the objections to her getting this award from those in the Jewish community you're referring to?
Primarily that she was pro-Palestinian and therefore anti-Israel. And unfortunately, I did not hear any distinction between anti-Semitism and anti-Israeli policy. I heard that it was all grouped together, and it was just a blanket kind of condemnation that was based on the fact that there was this dualistic kind of policy in terms of you're either for us or against us, and there's no in-between.
How do you feel about that?
I'm heartbroken. I'm angry. I believe that Palestinian people deserve to have the rights that they're not allowed to have currently in Israel. I think that as a Jew, it's It's a deep, deep embarrassment and shame that I feel that we would become an oppressor even though we see ourselves as an oppressed people. And I think that people don't realize that you can be both. A lot of people who see it themselves still with the paranoia and with the insulation of being a Jew don't realize that we have the capacity also to be prejudiced and to be biased against people who are not us.
My name is Emily Ratliff, and I live in Boston, but I grew up in Birmingham. And I came because I've been following this story ever since it broke. I feel like that I spend a lot of time in the South. My family's still down here. I do political work with progressive organizations in the South. And one of the things that was so disheartening to me was that after this story broke, it was unclear. The Civil Rights Institute was not making it. They were not saying explicitly, this is why Dr. Davis is not qualified to receive this award. But there was discussion about whether or not it had to do with her support of Palestinian human rights. And I was not hearing. I have Jewish friends who live here. I went to school with a lot of Jewish students, and I didn't hear progressive Jewish people in Birmingham standing up and saying, not in our name. I'm very moved by the number of people here and the youth. I think that's really hopeful, and I'm really glad there were clearly Jewish people here who knew the words to the Shabbat. I'm not Jewish, so I don't even know if I'm using the right language. But I was very moved that there were Jewish people who were saying, in effect, not in my name.
Can you talk about Birmingham and what it was like to grow up here?
It was very segregated. It was very segregated. And I lived in a wealthy suburb called Mountain Brook. And we were kept pretty much from what was going on downtown. I remember that our church was, my mother said, on this particular Sunday, black people may come to our church, and we will handle that as we handle it. She didn't expect them to be turned away, but she just wanted to warn us as kids. I was, I think, 13 at the time.
And why were they coming?
It was after the letter from the Birmingham jail, and Martin Luther King had written that the 11 o'clock hour was the most segregated hour. 11 o'clock on Sunday was the most segregated hour in the week, and he had called on pastors who were saying, it's too quick, don't go so fast. He was saying, no, that it's time. It's time.
My name's Margaret Weinberg. I'm not from here originally. I'm from Vermont originally, and I've been in Birmingham for 3 years. I'm here tonight because I was really, maybe not surprised is the right word, but taken aback by the decision by the Civil Rights Institute to not give Angela Davis the award. And I think my Judaism has always been very tied up in social justice. And I was really excited when I heard that there were folks in Birmingham who also didn't agree with that decision and wanted to have a conversation about it. I think that having this discussion is really important. Obviously, there are people with all sorts of different opinions, and it's just good that we're using this as an opportunity to talk about it.
When you heard that the Holocaust Center sent a letter to the Birmingham Civil Rights Institute criticizing Angela Davis for her support of Palestinian rights, what were your thoughts as a Jew?
To me, I know that other people feel differently about this, but I've never equated Palestinian solidarity with anti-Semitism. And to me, those are just two different things, and we need to keep them two different things so that we can have discussions about anti-Semitism and racism.
when you heard that the Birmingham Civil Rights Institute reversed their decision to rescind the honor, how did you feel?
I mean, I think it's good that they rescinded it, but it did, you know, I think that they, it seemed to me that they didn't anticipate that level of pushback at the decision. I think it's good that they took it back, but they should have made a different decision in the first place. But, I mean, I think the important part now is that there have been so many fruitful conversations that have come out of this in Birmingham amongst different groups of people, and that seems to be a really powerful thing. So I'm glad that it's not something that just happened and faded away.
Participants in the Angela Davis Solidarity Shabbat in Birmingham, Alabama, Friday night. There were scores of such Angela Shabbats organized around the country by Jewish Voice for Peace. When we come back, Angela Davis herself. Stay with us.
Let's take a walk around the old bazaar, where every little thing has traveled far. Every pair of pants and grain of rice contains a horror story in its price. A story of the power people wield, a story about factories and fields, of which you'll never have to be aware, just as long as the butcher gets his share.
The Butcher's Share by Daniel Kahn and the Painted Bird. This is Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman as we continue our look at the weekend of events in Birmingham, Alabama, celebrating Angela Davis. More than 3,000 people came to Birmingham's Boutwell Arena for the Birmingham Committee for Truth and Reconciliation's event to honor her on Saturday evening. Organizers arranged the event in response to the Birmingham Civil Rights Institute's decision to rescind the Fred Shuttlesworth Human Rights Award it had offered to Davis. The Institute later reversed this decision and is hoping she will return to accept the award soon. But Saturday night's event featured a conversation between Dr. Angela Davis and Princeton professor Imani Perry, who is also from Birmingham. Dr. Perry opened the conversation.
So let's begin with how we got here today. You were to receive a humanitarian award from the Birmingham Civil Rights Institute. That award was rescinded before being reinstated. But when it was rescinded, the people of Birmingham, Alabama, immediately responded.
You know, I have never loved Birmingham as much as I love Birmingham at this moment. Yeah.
I'm interested in hearing your thoughts about that process, and in particular, what we learn, both about history, but also about the present. Virtue, what happened?
You know, I didn't have a chance to get mic'd like you,
Okay.
Because I wanted to see everything that happened before I came on.
Yes.
So, and it is really a joy to be here this evening. I want to thank everyone for coming out. People in Birmingham, from Alabama, and I know my friends and comrades are here from New York and Chicago and Oakland and all over the country. So thank all of you for being here this evening. It almost feels as if we're marking a new beginning.
Yes.
And what I can say is that, of course, when I learned that I was to receive the Shuttlesworth Human Rights Award from the Birmingham Civil Rights Institute, I was overcome with joy. Reverend Shuttlesworth has always been one of my heroes. And I have always admired those, especially Odessa Woolfolk.
Yes.
Who had the vision that led to the creation of the Birmingham Civil Rights Institute. Mm-hmm. And so I want to say from the very beginning that I don't want to do anything that can damage the future of this very important institution in our community. But I was surprised to hear that later they decided to rescind the award. And then when I discovered that it might have something to do with my involvement over many years in efforts to advocate for justice for Palestine. Mm-hmm. It became clear to me that this might actually be a teachable moment.
Yes.
That as much as the whole controversy might have, at least for the moment, damaged the reputation of those who made that decision, that we might seize this moment to reflect on what it means to live on this planet in the 21st century and our responsibilities not only to people in our immediate community, mm-hmm. but to people all over the planet.
Yes.
And of course, in occupied Palestine, Black people especially owe a great deal to Palestinians who have been struggling for decades and decades and refuse to give up. They are an inspiration to people who are fighting for freedom
everywhere.
The planet.
Yeah.
So did I answer your question, Imani?
Yes, but relatedly, though, because I think that there is a misperception that is fairly widespread in this moment that is important for us to talk about, that solidarity with Palestinian people does not mean one is anti-Semitic or does not also have solidarity with Jewish people, right? And yesterday, I think it was yesterday, there was a national solidarity Shabbat for you, right? And for those who aren't aware, Shabbat is the Sabbath ritual for Jewish people. Right? And one of the things that they said as part of the solidarity Shabbat, right, is Angela, you are welcome at this Shabbat. What can you tell us about the significance of that, both the phrase itself, but also for you as a person who is been engaged in struggles for justice that are international for the majority of your life?
Well, first of all, I know that Jewish Voice for Peace has done an incredible job, not only at this particular moment, mm-hmm. but in general,
yes.
Creating a very powerful movement among Jewish people.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I was, by the way, just speaking at Brandeis last week. I went to Brandeis University, which was founded in the same year as the State of Israel. And I often point out that I learned about Palestine at a Jewish university.
Right.
And so Jewish Voice for Peace has done an amazing job over the last years bringing people together, you know, all over the country. So when I heard about this Shabbat, I said, well, first of all, it made me feel really humble.
Yeah.
Because I'm, you know, I don't really think of myself as being special. Now, hold on for a second. Let me say what I have to say. I think that a lot of work that has been accomplished by organizations and movements and huge numbers of people gets projected onto individuals. I know we often assume that when we speak of the civil rights movement, immediately, who comes to mind? Dr. King. And of course, Dr. King was a powerful figure, but he did not create the civil rights movement. And I think particularly at this moment in our history, when we are so influenced by the neoliberal ideologies of global capitalism, we have to figure out ways in which we can contest this individualism that shapes the way we think about the world. So what I want to say is that I'm happy to be here, but I think it's important that you know that I am simply standing in for the work that was done by vast numbers of people, thousands and millions of people all over the country and all over the world. And so that is how I read the Shabbat. And the slogan, Angela, sister, you are welcome in this house. Angela, sister, you are welcome in this Shabbat. Comes from a slogan that was used on many posters all over the country when I was underground fleeing the FBI. So people put up these posters on their doors. Angela, sister, you are welcome in this house. And you have to realize that the only reason people are familiar with my name and my history today is because people did that work of organizing the movement to save my life back in the 1970s. Well, it started in 1969 when Ronald Reagan fired me from my job. But, you know, I don't know why I always end up in the middle of these situations. I really never asked to be at the center of it all. I was very happy to be organizing on the sidelines and doing the work to promote someone else. But somehow or another, I have no idea. And even now, at age 75, here I am again. But I can tell you that what I've always tried to do is to utilize the moment, to take advantage of the particular arena. And I think we're doing this here this evening. I was scheduled to be here on February 16th, and what is this date?
February 16th.
And here I am. Yes. Not because of anything I myself did, but because of the amazing organizing work of the Birmingham Committee for Truth and Reconciliation. So thank all of you who were involved in organizing this event this evening.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome former Mayor of Birmingham, Dr. Richard Arrington Jr.
Thank you very much. What a powerful, what an important moment of black history we have shared here this evening. I'm to be very brief, and so let me just reiterate what brought this committee together, and I will do that just by reading what I've jotted down here. This event began with a misunderstanding or a difference of opinion that sent shockwaves throughout our community and did not represent what we stand for and believe. There comes a time when a community must stand united and speak forcefully and with clarity about who we are. I am especially proud that in this moment of challenge, we ran not in different directions, not venting the anger and the frustration we felt. Instead, we ran to one another, linked arms, embraced one another, and lifted up a daughter who is celebrated in the world community for her stand on human rights. So I close by saying, we wanted to show our solidarity with her. We wanted to show it across generational and social lines. We wanted old people like me, distinguished community leaders like our judges and business leaders who you've heard from this evening, our millennials, our school children, and the dynamic young black women God has blessed us with. We wanted to all stand together in that same spirit that I'm sure runs in the bloodline from our ancestors from that fateful day of August 1619 in Jamestown. Hope everybody knows that. Jamestown 69. This is the spirit and bloodline that flows from our ancestors through each of us and through every one of our generations. Thank you.
Former Birmingham, Alabama Mayor Richard Arrington, the first African-American mayor of Birmingham, at an event Saturday honoring Angela Davis. When we come back, we'll hear from the head of the Birmingham Civil Rights Institute, who is hoping that Angela Davis will return to receive the Fred Shuttlesworth Award. Back in a minute. Instrumental by Micronauts. This is Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. Democracy Now! Spent the weekend in Birmingham, Alabama, where leading human rights activist, civil rights icon Angela Davis returned home in the wake of the controversy over the Birmingham Civil Rights Institute, which rescinded then re-awarded its Fred L. Shuttlesworth Human Rights Award to Dr. Davis. In a news conference Saturday, before the major event Saturday night, Dr. Davis was asked if she would accept the award.
I have not yet responded to the Institute. I think that should be a collective decision, particularly a decision that is taken by activists here in Birmingham. The issues are not simply issues involving me as an individual. So I will take my lead from the community in Birmingham.
After the news conference, Democracy Now! Headed over to the Birmingham Civil Rights Institute to speak with the president and CEO of the organization at the center of the controversy. Andrea Taylor sat down with us in the Institute's library to talk about the Birmingham Committee for Truth and Reconciliation's evening event. And also, well, I began by asking her to explain what had taken place.
I think the record has been pretty clear and pretty thorough that the Birmingham Civil Rights Institute selected Dr. Angela Davis as the recipient for the 2018 award, the Fred Shuttlesworth Human Rights Award, which is our highest honor given to those who have demonstrated commitment and courage and consistent, unwavering support of and advocacy for human rights. And we announced the award in the fall, and people were very excited that this would be happening, that Dr. Davis was receiving the award, was to be the recipient. And it was a homecoming for her. As you know, she was born and raised here in Birmingham and has had a distinguished career as a scholar, as an activist, and as a champion of human rights. Several months after the announcement, as people were buying tickets and getting ready to participate in the event, a group from the community raised concerns and objection to her selection. And subsequently, there was a decision taken by the board to rescind the award. And then later, the award was restored and the recension was revoked. And we hope that there will be an opportunity in the future to give the award to Dr. Davis. But we're very glad that she was an unfortunate set of circumstances that brought us to that moment. But we're very delighted that certainly that she's here today and that she is being celebrated and welcomed back to her hometown and acknowledged for the work that she has done in a career that has been fully devoted to activism and to the promotion and preservation of human rights, which is always a messy business one way or another, isn't it?
Well, we just went to Angela Davis's news conference that she held at her old elementary school, Tuttle Elementary School. And she also went through what took place, that in October you invited her, announced you'd be receiving the award. And then this decision was made right after New Year's. Could you explain, you said a group got in touch with the Birmingham Civil Rights Institute. What group?
Well, there wasn't, again, I think the record shows the chronology and what happened, but there was concern expressed about her activism in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. And there were we learned of this through social media, which now has become a vehicle for campaigns for people who object to many things. And so it was initiated by that group. We learned of it through social media, actually, and it was an unfortunate set of circumstances that led to the decision by the board to rescind the award and given that pressure. But as we think about it now, and there was a great outcry, we learned something about how people all over the world feel a connection to Birmingham and its civil rights history. We know that it's an unfortunate circumstance that led to the pressure that resulted in revoking the award. We think that restoring the award was the right thing to do. And we hope that a lesson has been learned about having the courage and being willing to advocate on behalf of that, something that should actually happen.
One of the people who was very outspoken in his criticism was the mayor of Birmingham, Mayor Woodfin, who is an ex officio board member, is that right?
That is correct, yes.
At the Birmingham Civil Rights Institute, and said, members of the community, Jewish and otherwise, were indeed vocal in their opposition to Dr. Davis receiving the Shuttlesworth Award, and you received a letter from the Holocaust Education Center. They expressed their concern about her advocating for Palestinian rights. Now, Dr. Davis has said that she advocates for human rights in this country and around the world, as Dr. King did, and that she sees them as inseparable. She talks about the intersectionality of all these issues. Once the board made their decision on January 4th in a conference call and then read her that decision on January 5th, I think it was a Saturday, that's when some people learned this was even happening, apparently even some board members who weren't in on the call. What What made the board decide to reverse their decision to take that award back from her?
Well, I think that it's something that the board should speak for themselves about. I'm not a member of the board.
So you weren't in on that emergency call?
I'm the staff person leading the organization. But I think that it...
Were you on that call?
It became clear that the body of work and the impact that Dr. Davis has had on a generation, several generations actually, of leaders around civil and human rights, and her particular focus in the civil rights movement warranted her receiving the award that we, as I think was said when we announced that we think that Reverend Fred Shuttlesworth would be very pleased and proud to see Dr. Davis as the recipient. And so the board came to understand that and determined that they would reverse the decision. And we're very hopeful, as I said, that it was that it will be something that she will come back to Birmingham, or we will go wherever, that we will have an opportunity to actually present the award to her and that she will agree to receive it.
So you had the Birmingham City Council, you had the Birmingham School Board, all expressing, well, I guess you could say just great dismay at the decision of the Birmingham Civil Rights Institute and expressing their support for Dr. Angela Davis. When you say this was a moment of learning, even for the board here, does that mean, and there were three board members who quit, right? The head of the board, the vice chair of the board,
and the secretary.
As well as the secretary. Does that mean, is it because they three were against conferring the award on her?
So they made their own decision about whether to continue or not, and it was their choice to resign. I think that governance became also a question as to how decisions were taken. But they chose to resign, and we have now vacancies on the board, and we're focusing on how will we recruit board members who will carry forward the legacy and the narrative of Birmingham and its civil rights movement. And we want to be sure that we have individuals who understand the history and the complexity and who will be good stewards of this institution and of the story that's Birmingham civil rights.
Will the Institute reveal how the board voted? I know a number of different groups have asked who voted against Dr. Davis, who voted to revoke this award to begin with that led to this sort of calamity within the community.
Yes, that information will be posted and be available to the public. But I think really the question is not just about who voted and how they voted, but really it's a lesson for the community about how different events and a different historical narrative, or even the examination of a single person's life, can be evaluated differently by different people at different points in a chronology and in a timeline.
Dr. Davis said, when asked if she would accept the Fred Shuttlesworth Award, that at this point it's not just up to her, that she wants it to be a community decision. And I'm wondering how you foresee that dialogue going forward.
I see it as absolutely critical, and we've already started that dialogue. We began that dialogue in January. We reached out to a number of the members of the Truth and Reconciliation Committee. We know them. This is a small community. They know us. Many of them are friends of the Institute. Some are even former recipients of the Fred Shuttlesworth Award, Mayor Richard Arrington being an example. He was a recipient of the award last year in our 25th anniversary year. So we know the individuals who are sponsoring today's events. We're pleased that they are doing that. Again, we think that this recognition is well-deserved, and we would hope to continue to have a dialogue with them as we seek to bestow the Shuttlesworth Award on Dr. Davis.
Have you gotten a chance to talk to Dr. Davis directly?
I have not, and I look forward to doing that and extending both apology and also admiration for the work that she has done and that she continues to do. And I look forward to reading the first of the books that might come out of her having donated her papers to the Schlesinger Library, and what scholars might do in really trying to help understand what happened in this controversy and what the meaning and arc of her body of work has been over three quarters of a century, I think she's celebrated recently.
Do you want to just look into the camera and directly address Dr. Davis?
Well, Dr. Davis, I would just say that we admire you. You're a daughter of Birmingham. You've had an outstanding career as an activist and an advocate, and continue to inspire. And we wish you well, and we're delighted that you're in town today.
That was Andrea Taylor, president and CEO of the Birmingham Civil Rights Institute, who was heading off to that evening's event, in which 3,000 people went to welcome Dr. Davis and hear her conversation after the major event. I spoke with Dawana Thompson, founder of Woke Vote, chair of the Birmingham Committee for Truth and Reconciliation, and I asked her what it would take for the committee to be comfortable with Dr. Davis accepting the Fred Shuttlesworth Award from the Birmingham Civil Rights Institute.
I think that whatever the turmoil is that's happening at the BCRI, it reflects really a shift of ideas and power around what the Institute really stands for, who they want to be in the community in the face of that. And I think for us, we just want a transparent conversation about the root of some of this that has happened. And because only with that transparency can we figure out how do we build from this moment and really heal. We want to be sure, you know, everything that we've done with Dr. Davis's legacy, her spirit in mind. So we would certainly take our cues from her. We know that she's rooted in restorative justice. And so as she opened up with tonight, no one wants to see the Birmingham Civil Rights Institute not be the beacon that it is to this community. We need the Institute. We also need good leadership. And so if we need to have conversations, if we need to do trainings, if we need to do mediation, whatever it's going to take to ensure the trust of that leadership is renewed in the community, that's what we're committed to do.
When you say transparency, what are you asking for?
Well, we want to know what was the real root cause. I think that is still nebulous and mysterious. We know that there were some, or we were being told that there are some who just felt a certain kind of way, maybe about some of her activism, some of her remarks. But we have a hard time reconciling that being strong enough, if you will, to rescind something as significant as that award. And we hope that by having a transparent conversation, possibly getting the minutes from the meeting where it was, you know, brought to the attention of the board to consider it, you know, that'll give us a real and true place to start from. Until then, we're speculating about how to deal with it. The community does not want to speculate. We want to coalesce around each other. We want to be activated around truth. And so we need them to come to the table with truth.
Dawana Thompson, founder of Woke Vote, chair of the Birmingham Committee for Truth and Reconciliation. We end today's show with the final words of Dr. Angela Davis Saturday night.
And it's very exciting to see all of the young women in Congress. Women like Ilhan Omar, who are telling it like it is. And so, you know, let us use this moment to generate the strength and the enthusiasm and the vision to move forward, to a better future for Birmingham, for the country, and for the entire world. Thank you.
Scholar and activist Dr. Angela Davis in Birmingham, Alabama, her birthplace Saturday, to see the whole conversation with Dr. Imani Perry and Dr. Davis, go to democracynow.org. 3,000 people came out to see Dr. Davis. That ends our show. Happy birthday to Neil Shabata. Democracy Now! Is currently accepting applications for a full-time, one-year paid news production fellowship. Details online at democracynow.org. Special thanks to John Hamilton, Dennis Moynihan, Carla Wills, Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Nermeen Sheikh, Tammy Warrenoff, Sam Alkoff. I'm Amy Goodman.